Hello, it's the Holtcast and Aston Villa podcast, the first of a new Premier League season. I'm James, joined by Cole Petham of Talk Aston Villa fame. Aston Villa played their first Premier League match yesterday. It was against Tottenham Hotspur. Villa took the lead through John McGinn before Spurs new man Ndombele scored a quite sweet effort to equalise, and that man, Harry Kane, always scores against Villa, and he scored two more yesterday to make it 3-1 just before the final whistle was blown. How are you doing, Cole?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Yeah, good. I guess I'm pleased with the performance yesterday. I'm unhappy about the scoreline. A loss is a loss and a loss hurts, but the performance made it a little bit sweeter to take. What are your thoughts on the general performance yesterday and that loss?
Over time, I feel like I'm a little bit more calm about it now. Yesterday, honestly, after I felt sick to my stomach, I think it was more in the sense of it's like another loss in the Premier League, even though it's been 3 years. So maybe maybe like old kind of panic situation, PTSD, maybe you could call it, set in for that. But no, now feeling a lot better. There's a lot of positives to take. There's still 37 games left, so we don't know what's going to happen. But I'm still confident we'll stay up. I'm still confident we can do something and roll on.
Yeah, I know it's against Spurs, but a loss is a loss, and a loss stings, especially because it's it's exactly how we left off last time we're here with a loss. So we haven't made any kind of winning introduction or changed our course of destiny so far. But I guess Tottenham were all over us. So any result there would have been positive. They had 3 expected goals. We had 0.63. And on the balance of things, that seems very fair. They were carving us up, especially when Christian Eriksen came on. But they seemed a bit more dangerous. And if Villa fashioned a better chance in the first half when they had the opportunity to do so through Trezeguet, perhaps it'll be a different story. But no, here we are, Tottenham 3, Aston Villa 1. A number of things to speak about, Cole. Firstly, is the John McGinn goal. Aston Villa scored first through John McGinn. He gets onto a ball from Tyrone Mings, quite a searching long, but I was going to say hoof, but it was more of a pass. And through the middle, John McGinn is sprinting through the middle. He nestles it with his forehead. Wesley carves the avenue. He sprints through. McGinn makes a chance, and then he shoots and scores 1-0. How were you feeling when Villa went 1-0 up?
Well, to be fair, I thought I would be more excited, but unfortunately my stream was like a good 15 seconds behind the actual game, like it always is. So checking Twitter, I already saw that it went in, so like maybe, I know. So I still stood up and cheered, but like it wouldn't have been as good as seeing it live and not realizing it happened. No, great move. I have to give Wesley some credit there too, because obviously he distracted a defender, pulled him away quite well actually, and McGinn really to head it down and kind of Danny Rose was coming in from out wide, and to really head the ball further away from Rose and to switch it back and put Rose basically on his bottom, what more can you ask for? Great goal. The sky of the limit was at that point, and you know what, honestly it could have been 2-0 shortly after with Trezeguet, so happy with that. And I wish it was 2-0, but it is what it is. How'd you feel about it?
Yeah, very, very happy. It was John McGinn, of course. He scored the goal that sent us here in the first place. He scores our first goal back. He was, of course, linked to Manchester United in the summer. Whether there's any actual tangible truth outside of any discussions Sir Alex Ferguson may have had with his agents and the Scottish footballing establishment is a completely different thing. He's still a Villa player. And I think he had a lot to prove, because those rumours were laughed at. People were saying, John McGinn, who is he? You know, Scottish plodder. The kind of football Twitter tweets that come out, and we know John McGinn's class, and he proved it yesterday all over the pitch. Complete engine. He probably could have won a penalty as well. And I know there's a lot of Villa fans saying, there was nothing in it. There's a few that are saying the more they look at it, it's a foul because the defender stumbles into him when he's in the box and control of the ball, and it takes him straight out. So where do you lie with that, Cole?
I'm going to say no, just based on the fact that, honestly, there was one challenge. I can't remember which half it was, and it was on, I can't remember if it was on Kane or whoever it was, and I thought maybe that could have been a penalty too. It's going to be, there's going to be things even with VAR that, obviously, it's going to be missed, and the ref is still going to miss things. So it is what it is. Could it have been given with another referee? Probably. Should have been given. There's definitely a chance. I don't know. It's half and half. You're going to get some, and you're not going to get some. At the end of the day, it is what it is. And you know what? Looking at it now, could that have changed the whole outcome? Probably. But we are where we are. How do you feel about it, James?
at the time, I thought there's nothing in it, but the more you see it, it is kind of one of those things that seems like it would have been blown for a penalty.
Oh, for sure.
Because the players are through in on goal, and then they're dispossessed, and they're dispossessed quite forcefully and seemingly clumsily. And I genuinely thought, more I see it, it looked like a penalty. Dean Smith didn't really think it was, which was it was interesting, but there we go. It's all subjective. If it's not whistled, then we're all going to have our thoughts, whether it should have been or not. You mentioned Trezeguet a few moments ago. He was through it on goal for Villa's kind of second big chance. I think there wasn't much apart from that. But Trezeguet was through it on goal, and he looked really lively, despite the fact he didn't score. It comes after a Grealish run, where Grealish blocks the ball. Then he dribbles across the entire pitch. This is what Jack Grealish does, right? Then he makes a chance for Trezeguet, who's cutting inwards. Trezeguet makes a space, but he can't get the shot off. What did you think of his league debut for Aston Villa?
It was great, honestly. Did more than I expected. I was actually a little nervous with that signing. You hear a lot of mixed reviews with any signing, especially him, though. A lot of people saying he's very selfish, kind of has maybe 10 to 15 minutes of a full 90 that he'll actually maybe do anything, from what I would read prior to signing him. But no, he played really well. Tottenham definitely struggled. It's kind of hard to say maybe they struggled, because we are a promoted side. It's not something they're accustomed to for at least 3 years. And this is a whole new makeup of a side. So for any manager to really have a solid game plan, it's going to be tough in that fact. But no, he was fantastic. I thought maybe he should have stayed on a little bit longer. Would have liked to see that, because maybe we'll get onto that later. The substitutions, I thought the timing was a little bit poor there. But no, fantastic. He had a few opportunities. The one in particular, I thought he probably should have done a little bit better with. But no, how do you feel about him?
Pretty impressed. I didn't think he'd be starting, to be fair. But there was news of an injury to Al Ghazi that he was working to shake off. And I thought Trezeguet may be starting in lieu of Al Ghazi, and Hotter would be brought in. But no, both of them started. And I thought Trezeguet was perhaps more impressive than Al Ghazi. Al Ghazi came in, and I thought this would be type of, his game. He's there. He's a tall figure that can get on the end of a longer pass. He's got the speed to, create the counter. He's got the ability to change a game. He really didn't have a look in at all. And I thought he was perhaps one of the more disappointing performances of Villa's return to the Premier League. What are your thoughts on that? Where do you lie on that?
Oh, no, I 100% agree with you on that one. Firstly, I'm going to apologize if anyone can hear sounds like a chicken in the background. My roommate got a new dog. It's a chow, and he literally barks at everything for like an hour. So, you can hear that in the background. But yeah, no, I totally agree with that one. I'll keep that short and simple. Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah, Freddie Wilbur was a miss. He wasn't in the lineup. I was going to say his removal from the lineup was, of course, a cause for concern or debate amongst Villa fans, but no, he wasn't in the lineup at all. So how did you feel about that?
That was really weird. I kind of, and I wish I tweeted it out before, because maybe I would have sounded really smart, but I had that feeling that El Mohamedy would have started, just because the way Spurs play, we don't know exactly if Eriksen's going to play, a few others are going to play. We knew who they were missing. I thought maybe just to have an experienced head in there would have been a lot better, and that did happen. To not see him on the bench was a little strange. I know Dean Smith said after the game that he wanted to play with obviously two players, defense, midfield, and attack. So that made sense. But to leave him out completely seems a little odd. I don't know if there's something we don't know. But maybe it's something to look into in the future. How'd you feel about that one? Because it still puzzles me, to be honest.
But I do think it was a little bit unfair on Wilbur, who had been perhaps one of our better performers in preseason.
Oh, totally.
No, he wanted to go with Almo as well, because Almo's a good player. He's a solid player. And he also has quite a good chemistry with Trezeguet, who was starting on the right, and we saw that in the match. That's not something he had just magicked up or just simply thought about for seconds. No, he came on and he worked well with Trezeguet, one of our new signings, a man who was starting on the right. Revel Hotter should have been starting on the right. He's a completely different conversation. But Trezeguet did well enough, and I think we'll see him in the team going forward. Whilst we were talking about a missing member of the Villa lineup, Freddie Wilbur, who wasn't around or he was displaced by Dean Smith, we have got our own displaced member to bring back into the podcast. It's Danny Raza, who has joined late as per usual. How are you doing, Danny?
All right, guys. I'm doing well. I've just been just running around, man. It's like it's Eid weekend, which means it's been held Sunday and Monday, right? Because there's like disagreements from like what day it is and all that kind of stuff. Won't go too much into it, but that means just running around, going to so many different houses. So obviously it was going to make time for you guys. How are you guys doing?
I feel special now.
Yeah, we just wanted to know your thoughts on yesterday's match, just in brief, because we, you know, we've got to catch you up into the podcast. How are you feeling after Villa's loss yesterday?
Okay, I think this is just a testament to how well we've grown and how positive Dean Smith's influence has been. And I got a bit of stick for this on Twitter, but I'm a realist. I don't want to heap praise constantly if I think we could have done better. There were positives yesterday. I was so, so happy with Mings and Engels' performances. I was thoroughly impressed with Neil Taylor. El Mohamedy didn't seem to have to defend from the left-hand side too often. I don't think Spurs really gave much of a threat there. But I thought Tom Heaton, again, fantastic. Although I was a little bit worried with our lack of control over midfield. And I know that, you know, we're going up against the Champions League finalists, and they are obviously going to be much better in that respect. But I would have liked to have seen, you know, McGinn and Grealish given a little bit more opportunity to kind of burst forward, I guess. I thought that some of our attacks just fell very flat in the end. There was obviously the goal from McGinn, which was great on the counter-attack. It was interesting seeing us playing a totally different system to what we did last season in terms of we're playing on the counter rather than controlling and pushing high up the pitch with a high press. And it worked. I think there's definitely a sense that we can implement that against bigger teams. Stronger teams. But my problem was that we didn't execute it very well at all. I could tell that we weren't very comfortable with it. When McGinn went through, it was great. It was brilliant individual play, but also a good pass from Tyrone Mings. Grealish and Trezeguet, very, very close with their effort as well. Grealish maybe just lost his footing just ever so slightly, and Trezeguet maybe should have been a little bit more confident on his left foot. So those are two good signs. But what I found a lot of the time was players were getting isolated. Too many times, El Ghazi and Trezeguet seemed to have to try and run through on their own without any sort of option behind them. And I thought also we got way too nervous whenever we came to the halfway line. And I think that was my worry. We got nervous when we pushed forward. And instead of, you know, taking a breather and trying to find a man and just calmly trying to distribute the ball around, I think we panicked. We panicked way too much. And I also would have liked to have seen Wesley press a little bit more. So for me, yeah, a couple of things I was disappointed with. I realize I'm waffling on over here, but I don't know how much time I have. So I'm just trying to summarize it real quick. I was a little bit disappointed, if I'm totally honest, because we created chances in the first half, and I would have liked to have seen us get a bit bolder in the second. I don't think we're going to be able to sit back like that against teams this season and expect to win a particularly large amount of points.
Well, that's the podcast over and done with, because Danny's explained everything about it.
Literally.
The entire match has been summed up very, very kindly and thoughtfully there by Danny Riser. But no, Cole, I wanted to ask you about the midfield, because Danny brought up a good point that we were kind of struggling as the game went on. We did look kind of dominant in that first half. We did seem to set our stall out and say, come at us, we'll defend, we'll do whatever we can. You're not taking the goal. Our midfield got tired. Jack Grealish got tired. Conor Hourihan got tired. And John McGinn especially got tired. All key performers in that first half or who really stepped up to the plate. And they kind of dropped off as the game went on. Probably due to that system change, they didn't have the chance to rest with the ball. They weren't dominating the possession, so they weren't able to rest on the ball and kind of gather that, you know, that energy back that they were able to in the Championship, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a tale of two halves if you really think about it, because it looked like we were full of energy in the first half. They were struggling with us on the counter, and the midfielders were pinging balls out that were causing their defense to have some issues. It really came down to the changes Spurs made, because as soon as Eriksen came on, those three just struggled, very spread out. Hourihan was gassed like early on second half. There should have been a change there probably even 15 minutes before he was taken off. I think overall, especially for Dean Smith, maybe that's a lesson he wants to and needs to learn. Substitutions versus Spurs instead of, say, I don't know, say Bolton or something like that, you're not going to get away with keeping someone on who's absolutely gassed until like the 80th minute. We were trying to hold on for as long as we can, but when you are going to play with three midfielders, you need fresh legs, and to essentially leave dead legs on for so long, it's going to cause you problems, because these are teams that are not going to just ping the ball into the box in the like in the championship. These are teams that are going to play 1-2 passes, quick movement, and try to literally embarrass your defense. So it's something to work on. A little frustrating, but no. How do you really feel about it?
It's the same thing. It's just when we grew into the game in that first half, it was all action, all running around, you know, pressing fairly high up the pitch when we got had the chance to. So yeah, I guess it was just those tired legs. We weren't able to afford that time to rest on the ball, which is a Dean Smith thing, right? Get into possession, rest on the ball, gather your energy after pressing and winning it back. Take time and patience with the ball and carving out another attack. We weren't able to do that because Tottenham were dominant in possession. They were dominant in the press, and we really struggled on the back foot. Danny, I wanted to talk to you about the performance of Tyron Mings and Bjørn Engels, two new signings in their own right, who really stepped up and seemed to instantly carve out a really good partnership on the back. At the back, what were your thoughts there?
Oh, it's the biggest positive of the game, really. It's the best thing I can take out of it, is that I think there's going to be games where we're going to get bombarded. I mean, by the likes of, you know, the mid-table Premier League teams, you know, your Watfords and your Leicesters and stuff. There's going to be games where we're going to get bombarded and we're just going to have to hold on somehow. And I'm convinced that Engels and Mings are going to be able to do that. I thought Mings, you know, showed his leadership skills again. One of the goals, he looked irate, which is great to see. I want to see that passion. You can tell that they put everything into it. Look, I've got no problem with the effort that was put in yesterday. I think everybody worked their socks off, right? But Engels and Mings just held everything together for so long, because I think Tottenham had something like, they had something between 25 to 30 shots or something like that all game. And I know that not all of them were on target, but there were so many life-saving or game-saving blocks and challenges that the two of them made. I think Engels instantly has impressed so many Villa fans. I mean, all I saw on Twitter yesterday, and it's great that people are positive, right? All I saw on Twitter yesterday was people just loving Engels instead, man.
You went for the Robbie Williams pun there.
Yeah, it was loving Engels again. You know,
it's cold. No, do you know who Robbie Williams is? I'm not sure if he made it across the.
Oh God, I guess I'm really stupid if I ask this. Is he the singer?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got him. Yeah. Okay. The only reason I know that is because I listened to a podcast and I said, "Oh, I know who that is." So yeah, I'm smart now. Okay. Cool.
Well, yeah, you know who Robbie Williams is, which is probably the most pointless bit of knowledge we could have given you. If you're going to take anything away from this podcast, that you know who Robbie Williams is, and I guess it's something. Yeah, it's what people listen. I hope it's what people listen to. Otherwise, we've got problems. But Cole, no, I wanted to seriously talk to you about another Englishman, Tom Heaton in goal. He was really impressive yesterday. I thought so anyway.
Oh, amazing. Could have been 5-6-1. You never know. Some fantastic saves. The way he controls the box. I hate to be I'm not a Jed Steer hater by any means or negative on him, but it's just something he couldn't do. I can't see him pulling off those saves, and I can't see him commanding the box like Heaton does. Bring something else completely different. You know what we paid for him is what we needed to do, and an absolute bargain in my eyes, because if we get, I don't know, 3-4 years out of him, it could be the best purchase we have for those 3-4 years. Fantastic. A little unlucky maybe on a couple of them, because I thought Kane's first one just absolutely fell to him, and when you're basically all alone with Harry Kane, only one thing's going to happen. So he's going to be also someone that essentially will probably keep us up if it comes to a relegation scrap, because he's going to make those saves, and I have my fantasy league team too, so those save points will come in handy. But how do you feel about him?
Very positive. I think he'll win us points on his own. I was impressed with all aspects of his play. When we conceded the first time, when it was Ndombele who scored that kind of wonder shot after Heaton had already saved, he'd already performed the wonder save. So it was just a perfect kind of compliment to his save, that Ndombele shot, to bring in Tottenham back into the game at 1-1. when they took the lead, the 2-1, he was up at the halfway line, just making sure the team were okay, kind of getting their heads back. Make sure you're up for this. And I thought that's leadership. That is the proper leadership that we need from not just the captain or the club captain or his deputy. We need it from players like Tom Heaton, who are, they're evergreen players. This guy's going to be in the team for the rest of the season. He's going to be there all the time. So he needs to be that type of person who's going to be realistic and keep that team level-headed and make sure the heads don't drop. Because that's what kills you, is when that confidence goes. You saw against Norwich, Grant Hanley makes a mistake. His head's in his hand for an entire game. And it wasn't a game that Norwich looked that bad in. He was just completely out and down. And Tom Heaton doesn't want that to happen to his Villa team. He wants his Villa team to know that he's backing them, that he has faith in them. And I really like that from our goalkeeper. Danny, there's something I wanted to talk to you about with Tom Heaton, because there was quite an amusing bit of play. It's proper sweeper keeper. He comes out to claim a ball with his head. I was rather impressed by not the decision he made, but the confidence he had in the decision. We don't have that with our goalkeepers at Villa. We don't have confident goalkeepers. The guy comes out, claims the ball with his head. Maybe it's the wrong decision, but it worked, I guess.
I don't think it was the wrong decision. I think he did the right thing. I mean, keepers are meant to come out of the box when things like that happen. Yeah, you know, it's clearly going through the defense, and I think it was Harry Kane who could have gone straight through there. And I feel like if it was either going to go to Harry Kane or Tom Heaton was going to get something to it. And I'd much rather Heaton take that risk. If he heads it out and it goes to a Tottenham defender, it goes to a Tottenham attacker, fine. It was probably going to get netted by Harry Kane anyway. And also, there would have been an extraordinary number of men that ball would have had to go past for it to get into the goal, for it to go in. I think like Tyrone Mings was there anyway.
Yeah.
It was good to see that confidence from him. I was very impressed with Heaton. I was impressed with him. You know, when the floodgates opened, it was because I think the team buckled a little bit, and I don't think that was his fault necessarily. So I mean, I was very impressed. All those saves. I mean, I think Cole, as Cole says, like those are things that I just don't think Jed Steer would have been able to do, and I couldn't imagine Jed Steer coming out and having the confidence to do something like that. Certainly not Kalinic. We're going to need some of that. We're going to need some of that sort of decision making. You're going to need a goalkeeper who's confident enough in his own ability to make those difficult decisions, because that's what happens in the Premier League.
The performance of Wesley, I guess, is something I wanted to speak about. You both probably have your thoughts on that. So I'll go to Cole first, because he's probably been waiting a while to speak about Wesley. It wasn't the best debut by any margin, despite that quite nice hockey assist, I guess you'll call it, the assist to the assist, or to the goal when he pushed, I believe it was Kyle Walker-Peters, out of the way. Well, may have been Davison Sanchez. I'm not really too clued up on who it was, but no, he dragged the defender completely wide with him and gave John McGinn the space to run in. Apart from that, there wasn't much going on.
No, I think he, maybe personally, and I'm sure he's already aware of this, these are top class players, you'd hope at least. But no, it's something I think he needs to learn and realize that he maybe needs to be a bit quicker with his feet when it comes to ball movement. I noticed there's a few times where he did a good job holding it up overall, in my opinion. But there's a few times I think he lost out just because he wasn't quick enough to really be aware who's around him. There's a few times he looked a little lost. And you know what? It's a more physical league than I think he realizes. And he did get pushed off the ball a few times there too. It is something to learn. He's only 22. It drives me nuts to see that people are already jumping on him to say he is the worst signing of the season. It's been one game. It's his first. He probably barely knows English. So like, what do you expect? It's frustrating to see that, but I think there is something there. Just the fact that it almost basically dragged away two defenders on his own will to create the John McGinn goal, if I can speak English, on his own. I think that really offers and says something, because we haven't had that since Benteke left, essentially. There is something there, but you know what? I'll stop rambling on and I'll let Danny take over.
I think the criticism of Wesley was so unfair. Look, I mean, I think there's definitely some sort of criticism you got to make of his performance. I think, namely for me, I think he should have been pressing way harder. But then I think that a lot of the rest of the team should have been pressing a lot harder, and that was potentially just a decision that Dean Smith made before the game. Perhaps it's not something that they were focusing on so much. But I did think that he didn't have an awful lot in terms of support when he did lose out the ball, when he was trying to hold up the ball. You know, what you need, what a key part of that is that you have another teammate close by who's able to pick it up. And way too many times it was 2-on-1. You know, he'd get the ball and then there'd be two Tottenham defenders surrounding him and nobody else is in sight. And it's just not something that we're used to doing. We're just not used to playing that counter-attack. We're used to having players close to each other and passing the ball around. And I think the whole team sort of lacked a sort of confidence yesterday. And I think that that for Wesley, I mean, that makes that hard. The other thing is we weren't exactly whipping balls into the box. So he's not really got any opportunity to shine there. And yes, he could have done better. He could have been a bit cleaner. But I think when it comes to the striker and it comes to a focal point, if nobody's supporting them, there's not much more you can expect. I mean, you might turn around and say perhaps it was the sort of game where you need to get in behind type of striker like Jonathan Codger. Maybe that would have worked better considering how much we struggled to kind of keep the ball against Spurs. But for Wesley, he's going to need to learn. He's going to need to learn quickly, and I think it's good that he's had a couple of games. He's had a game like this where he's been forced to struggle a bit.
I don't think we actually had a corner yesterday. From what I'm looking at, Spurs had 14 and we had 0. If that's correct, Danny's point's exactly right, because his strong point is in the air. It's going to be hold up play. It's not going to be pace and trickery. So no, that was a perfect point. I just wanted to bring that up because I think that's something definitely to look at. No crosses, no corners really, for a player that essentially needs that. Maybe some part of our game does need to change at some point.
Well, one part of the game plan that does need a change, and I've come to both of you about this, is the patience on the ball. I guess this was tired legs. It's kind of worthless speaking about the final goal because it was a foregone conclusion that Villa were completely out of the game at that point. But when Ndombele scored after Eriksen had come on, Spurs were absolutely in the ascendancy. When they had an attack, it fell short. Jack Grealish got the ball. He walked out of the box with it. He was looking for an option. He was looking for an avenue to dribble in. He didn't have it. Lamella's counter-press robbed him of the ball. It was a bit of a harsh tackle, maybe. It could have been blown for a foul, regardless. Lamella robbed the ball. He took a shot. It bounced off Mings, and it went through to Harry Kane. It was a bit of a mistake in all parts. Maybe Douglas Luiz, in his debut, could have made a more patient press to force Lamella to second guess his shot and take a different option. But no, it was a goal. Harry Kane scored his goal in August. He broke that curse that always seems to lurk around him. That's why people don't add him to their fantasy teams. But well done to anyone who if you captained him, you were in, weren't you?
It was in my team.
You captained bloody Sterling as well, didn't you, Danny?
By accident.
We'll come on to that in a bit anyway, because I didn't want to speak fantasy. But no, Harry Kane scored. He scored twice. The first goal, people are pointing at Jack Grealish for a mistake. And Cole, I want to come to you first. Simply enough, mistake or not a mistake?
Oh, yeah, it's a mistake. Yeah. I think people do forget he's still young. Everyone makes mistakes, especially on the pitch. But at the same time, you cannot be kind of screwing around with the ball in that area. That was a little, I guess, put in a kind way, silly. I don't really know what he was thinking at that point. If that was me, I guess I can't really say if that was me, because I'd probably do something even worse. But my first thought was just get rid of it. But it is what it is. And it really just essentially led to our demise in some sense. How do you feel about it?
I mean, like, again, it was just kind of an indication that I think our players were so confused and just off the pace just a little bit. When I say confused, I mean, it's a totally new system again. Right. And I think I don't know if this is kind of going straight off the. OK, I'm going to try and avoid going straight off the point of it. Right. But it was definitely a mistake from Jack, and he should have had somebody around him. But I think that goal especially just pointed me towards all sorts of fitness issues, man. Tottenham Hotspur have been playing in the ICC tournament throughout the offseason, the preseason. You know, they just, you know, played against like Inter Milan and, you know, other various just strong teams. And we've been screwing about playing, you know, trying to implement this new system, this counter-attacking system, which, you know, typically is going to be used against strong sides who constantly have the ball. We've been playing lower league teams. I don't think these boys have had a chance to really gel and get used to it. So the minute that they're under pressure from a Champions League, a potentially Champions League winning team, like they're going to struggle. And I think that's what happened here. We were just pressed out of it. And I don't think that we looked particularly fit. If it was, you know, if it was towards the middle part of the season, for example, Grealish might have been able to find an option. But I just think we looked totally off the pace, and that's why we're losing the ball. Jack Grealish losing the ball there was not a one-off error. I'm pointing towards the whole team, by the way. I'm not just looking at Jack Grealish here. We were constantly losing the ball. Tottenham were pressing so well. They looked so fit. They just never seemed to run out of energy. And eventually that counter press is going to, it's going to lead to something. You're going to get a lucky bobble eventually. If you're going to keep on making those kinds of opportunities, I don't care how good the defense is, eventually you're going to get a lucky bobble and it's going to go in. So that's what I think happened, essentially, with Grealish's goal, Grealish's mistake.
Well, mistake or not, whether it was the perfect execution of Tottenham's excellent game plan under Pochettino, Villa lost 3-1. A Harry Kane goal would come later. He scored two, and Ndombele scored one after John McGinn opened up the scoring for Aston Villa. 3-1 in the end. Cole, you're going to take my place today. You're going to choose your man of the match ball on my behalf. Who are you thinking? Not necessarily the man of the match, but the person who impressed you the most, or someone who maybe defied the narrative. Anyway,
you know what? I'm going to go different. I'm going to go Tom Heaton. Although he conceded 3 goals, in my opinion, he was the most important player on the pitch. It could have been way worse, and I apologize for freaking out, dog. But yeah, that's my one. Danny, how do you feel?
See, this is a struggle because I think there genuinely was about 3-4 players in that team, maybe even 5, who you could say, you know, were really impressive. I think John McGinn's one of them. And, you know, for the fact that he scored the goal, I would quite like to give him the match ball, but I don't think I can look away from Bjorn Engels. It feels kind of weird giving the match ball to a defender sort of during a game where we've conceded 3. But having said that, I just thought he slotted in really well. He was the new defender. He was the new guy in that defense, because it's essentially the same thing, the same defense that we had had out in the playoff final. But just the kind of blocks he was making, the amount of times he saved us, I think I have to give it to him. I think when you look when we did start conceding those goals, I think a large part of that was perhaps due to the midfield rather than the defence. And I just think, yeah, Engels endeared himself. I think people are already sort of drawing comparisons to, well, hoping that he kind of transcends the typical Villa defender and maybe starts being seen as a Melberg or a Lauesen eventually. And people are already getting those kinds of feelings about him.
So plenty of positives to take forward. Before we speak about the next match, a quick fantasy football update. We've got our league, a 7,500 to Holt Fantasy Football League that was kindly started by Phil Vogel, who's appeared on the podcast a number of times. And we'll be updating you with the standings, the top three, and also our position. So Cole has just joined, so he's bottom. Unfortunately, he's just literally joined before we started recording, so he's bottom. In first place is a man called Nathan Love, Nath's 11. Second place is Real Ale Madrid. And third is Run DFC. But very important, our Danny Raza, out of countless people, somehow is 8th.
I've got 97 points.
Yep, you do. You've got 97 points and you're quite high. I'm 103rd, so that's not too bad considering how many people are in it. Cole's bottom, of course.
Hey, I got 85 points so far on my other one, so I'll take that.
Well, that's quite good.
Yeah, it's a decent performance, but no, I think it's a very fun thing to kind of discuss because it's just another competitive thing we can get really angry about in this podcast with each other because, you know, I'm never going to win predictions. I'm probably not going to win anything else. So
don't say that. Football.
I don't know, man, because when we scored, I thought, that's it, that's my prediction done, 1-0. Then it went to 1-1. which was your prediction. Then it went to 2-1, which was Phil's prediction. So it went through all the bloody predictions last time. And I was really nervous that I wouldn't get anything. And eventually we all left empty handed with a loss to boot. So no winners there, but there are winners in fantasy. We just went through them. So congratulations for being top of a game week one. Hopefully Villa can get some points on the board then, because they first Bournemouth next Saturday at Villa Park. Big match. Eddie Howe's team were leading against newly promoted Sheffield United for most of the match before Mr. Sheffield United himself, Billy Sharp, came off the bench and scored. Is this, Cole, Villa's big chance to get some points on the board?
Oh, I think so, 100%. This is, if you're going to tell me that... we were going to actually honestly play that well, in my opinion, against Spurs and then play Bournemouth, this is a game you're going to pick to at least get a point. No, this is a really important game. We need at least a point in this. And just even beyond the point, we need to grow some more confidence and to really show some ability that we belong, because if it gets to a point, and I hate being this negative, but if it gets to a point where it's like, oh, that was an all right performance, but we're not picking up points, does it really matter? So, yeah, if you look at their team as well, there are, in my opinion, some big holes. I don't really think they have the best goalkeeper. I think their defense can be shoddy at times, and really their attack is actually probably up there, in my opinion, within the Premier League. So, maybe it's kind of like us. We have a midfield that we like to rave about, but we also have a defense we can rave about too. With them, it's just the attack, in my opinion. So I think if we can win those two battles in defense and midfield, I can't see us not winning.
Eddie Howe, then, is he the man or not?
The guy. Well, it wasn't too long ago before he was... he was kind of being touted as the next England manager. I think he's been linked with big jobs before. Look, Eddie Howe, the job he's done at Bournemouth is tremendous. The way he's managed to kind of take them up, have them established as a strong Premier League team that don't actually spend an awful lot of money. I know they have like made a few big transfers, but they don't tend to pay more than sort of like 15 million for most of their signings. The way that he's managed to get Ryan Fraser playing is a revelation. Josh King and Callum Wilson as well have been brilliant. And I think it's just in general, he tends to have quite a young team with Bournemouth. And he's a system manager. You know, he manages to kind of, he's one of those few managers that manages to execute a three at the back or a five at the back formation and have it work so well in the Premier League. It was quite interesting seeing them up against Sheffield United as well. I think Philip Billing was really impressive for me, for example. But I think Eddie Howe, he can call himself the man at this point. Whether or not he's the type of manager to take a league, though, have a team to cups, that is a question yet to be answered.
They did drop points against Sheffield United. That can't be ignored. So they'll be coming to Villa Park hoping for a win themselves, right? It's not going to be as simple as Villa are facing weaker opposition. A similar performance, you know, a gutsy performance will get us the win. It's a lot harder than that. It's not a simple question, right?
Oh, exactly. No, they're going to come with full confidence. And I think we need to play with full confidence, because they're not going to want another point. They want to get a win under their belt, because knowing their team, and they've been in the Premier League for long enough to have ambitions to finish within, let's say, the top 12. So that's probably their ambitions this season. In my opinion, Eddie Howe is probably one of the hungrier, younger managers still, even though I have them probably tip for relegation, in my opinion, but that's just my opinion. But no, their style too kind of fits counter-attacking at times too, so it's gonna be interesting to see our counter-attacking style versus theirs. Is that gonna mean a very wide open game? Is that gonna mean someone's gonna have to change their formation, change their style? No, it's gonna be really interesting, and I'm definitely looking forward to it.
After Wesley's, I guess we're defining them as struggles now, and the reaction to his performances, Danny, do you think we'll be seeing another figure lead the line for Aston Villa? Will we be playing Jonathan Codger? Would we even opt for Keenan Davis, who Dean Smith has been impressed by all accounts?
I still believe that Wesley's performance was more a consequence rather than something we can overanalyze. So having said that, I think if Dean Smith looks at Bournemouth and thinks, and says, right, we're not going to counterattack. We're going to try and push for the 3 points like we did last season. Then I don't see any reason to drop him. Having said that, I could see Kodja doing well against Bournemouth. I could see Kodja doing well against a three at the back, so to speak. I think Wesley's probably a little bit more likely to get marked out of the game by the three of them, because I think they play with, say, Mepham, Cook and Ake. And I think Kodja would probably do a little bit more to stretch them out and just kind of get the wingers to get in a little bit more. I think Trezeguet is going to be very key against Bournemouth. I think that's something for sure. But yeah, I don't think there's any reason to drop Trezeguet based on that point. I think we need to try something different. I don't think we can do what we did against Tottenham and expect the same result.
Do you think Villa have to come on a bit more strongly, Cole?
Oh, 100%. Whether that means we're going to start from the front foot or that means we grow into the game, it's going to be tough, because essentially you have to pick one or the other. It's very rare you see kind of teams do both and dominate a full 90 minutes. We have to show more unity in the middle, more organization, because if we play in the middle like we did against Spurs, there's going to be issues. And whether that means her hand gets dropped, and that's something I actually want to ask you, James, for Louise, it's kind of up for debate with that one. I'll leave that with you, because I actually want to hear your opinions on that. Who would you start in that particular position?
So the holding midfield role is something that's kind of been up for debate ever since we signed Marvelous Nakamba and, of course, Douglas Luiz. But Conor Hourihane came in against Tottenham Hotspur and he didn't look that bad. It was just a total collapse of the midfield and our game plan in the second half due to, you know, Tottenham really leaning into us. That was more so the problem. I'd be encouraged to start with Hourihane in this simply because I didn't see that much in the last performance against Tottenham that would lead me to say, bring in Douglas, because I think maybe there is a option where Douglas can coexist with Hourihane in that lineup, but that would bring in the question we can never consider, which is the dropping of McGinn and Grealish, which is simply never going to happen and something we should probably never discuss. But yeah, I don't see a way for Douglas to get past Hourihane in this instant, because I think there was not a problem with how Hourihane performed. And if we're looking to come on stronger, maybe we need that deep line playmaker in Hourihane. We've been pronouncing his name wrong. We covered this last time, Conor Hourihane. Maybe we need those deep lying abilities, that ability to pick a great pass, and not so much that ball winning ability that probably Douglas can bring in.
But I don't see why that's like, I don't think that's Hourihane's position. I've always thought that he plays more in the sort of McGinn or Grealish role. Like, he needs more of an opportunity to go box to box. He can't hold that on his own. Bear in mind that McGinn and Grealish aren't exactly defensive midfielders. If you're trying to hold the ball in a Premier League game and you're worried that perhaps our midfielders don't have the same ability to kind of pass it around and not worry necessarily about getting bullied, then what you need is a stronger guy in there. Because I don't think McGinn, Hourihane and Grealish at all are strong enough to hold it together against, say, you know, a team full of Decores, for example. Do you know what I mean? I just can't see Hourihane doing the same sort of defensive work as Douglas or Nakamba.
Yeah, I think we have to certainly consider the idea of maybe this first home game is another opportunity for an experimentation. We see what works there, because I think you're pretty clear that Hourihane needs to be moved further up the pitch, and I fully agree that's been his position. He's a box-to-box midfielder. He's an 8 or a 10, exactly like Grealish and McGinn. We've got two 8s. We've got McGinn and Grealish who do that same kind of role on either side of the midfield, and Hourihane and Lansbury, to a further extent, should be there with him, whereas Nakamba and Luiz can play across the midfield, but we'll be looking for a deeper role for them. So maybe it is a case of Douglas coming in. Maybe it is a case that Hourihane keeps that hot hand because he didn't play badly. Maybe Dean Smith fancies the rotation. Maybe it's even Nakamba who may be brought in despite the fact he wasn't on the bench last time. There's a lot to play with there, and there's only so many positions, Cole. So I'm going to put you on the spot now. You've got one midfield position to choose from, because of course Grealish and McGinn are playing in those dual 8 roles. Who are you putting behind them?
Oh, geez, you're really putting me under the cosh now. I'd put Luiz. I think we need someone a bit more stable. Arjan can work in that situation, but against lesser opposition. And when I mean that, maybe promotion rivals, something like that. I just think he offers something, or if you're going to do it, maybe do like a first half, second half split with Luiz or Nakamba or something like that. I think there would definitely need to be a split for that to even work, because we saw it yesterday. He can't last, was it almost 80 minutes within that defensive deep lying role? It just doesn't work. He's a great ball slinger. He can create opportunities on his own. And he, in my opinion, proved part of that yesterday, but no, there's no way you can keep him in there, especially for that long, if you want to succeed, because evidently we're just going to hang him out to dry.
So maybe, Danny, it's a question not of really who starts there, but the role it can become 60 minutes into the match when you make a substitution. Maybe it's the fact that Douglas Luiz needs to come on if Harahan's gassed or McGinn's gassed, because we've got to consider that there's two other midfielders that we should be looking at substituting, because they do get tired and do make mistakes. So maybe it's not a question of who starts the match, but who finishes it. So do you think it'd be perhaps better if you brought on a Douglas Luiz and a Kamba 60-odd minutes into the match to give us that fresh ball-winning ability? I wanted to gather your thoughts there.
I think it depends on the way that Dean wants us to play. Like I my thoughts about Harahan starting against Spurs, for example, was that it wasn't sort of congruent with the way that Smith wanted to play, right? Because we were playing in a counter-attacking team. We played, we wanted to kind of hold off and well, I'm not saying invite the pressure from Spurs, but almost absorb that pressure and break. But Harahan, if you look at it, I would say is the weakest defensively out of Luiz and Nakamba. And that's not a criticism. It's just that he is the kind of player you expect to kind of have in your team if you're constantly moving forward, if you're constantly looking to attack. You can have him there if you want to, but we have to pass the ball around and hold our ground. Basically, I think that's the difference. If Smith wants us to counterattack against Bournemouth, if Smith wants us to hold back and spring something on them, then absolutely don't start with Harahan. Start with Luiz there, or start with Nakamba there. I think that's the difference. If then we want to push forward a little bit, then you can bring on Harahan after 60 minutes. I get the point about substitutions, but I think it all depends on, you know, where we're at the time. If we're 1-0 down to Bournemouth, then perhaps taking off Harahan for a defensive midfielder isn't necessarily going to add anything but energy, I guess. But if we're trying to hold something off, then yeah, sure. Bring on a Douglas or bring on an Akamba. But I think it just depends on the way that Dean Smith wants to play.
On a final note, before we choose our predictions, I have to ask this. Cole, Danny, are you actually excited about this next match? Because I know I'm here buzzing for it. I cannot wait.
I'm so nervous. I don't know. It's just, it's being back in the Premier League. I wasn't this nervous last season, or for the last three seasons, in fact. But no, it's just maybe it's nervous excitement. How do you feel, Danny?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not nervous. I think I'm excited. I'm really excited because I think that this is almost our first real chance in the Premier League. I think the Spurs game was a shock to the system. Regardless of what I may have said on Twitter earlier, I think there were people who were impressed with Villa, and I think against Bournemouth. I'm hopeful that we perhaps perform more like ourselves, and perhaps we play the Villa way, and you know, at Villa Park, with the crowd behind the team, with those guys and so many of them walking out there for the first time, in a competitive match. I really hope it just inspires them, and I think 3 points against Bournemouth is more than gettable. If we manage to get a win out of this game, then I can only imagine the amount of excitement it will bring around the club. I can only imagine the kind of confidence it will brew inside these players. But yeah, I'm so excited, man. The whole end is going to be rocking.
So, Cole, I want you to take my space again and choose a prediction on behalf of myself. Usually it's a two-person podcast. Today it's three. Hopefully going forward, we can make it a three-person podcast as well. So we'll have to adjust the format. We'll have to give you a match ball slot. You have to get the cursed third match ball. But I wanted you to translate your excitement into a prediction for Saturday.
Oh, geez. Okay. No pressure here. Let's see here. Let's go. Oh, it's not going to be easy. So let's say 2-1 Villa. I'll do goal scorers too, because why not? We'll say Grealish gets one for the fun of it, and Wesley opens up, and we'll say, I don't know, Josh King scores for Bournemouth because he's my fantasy league team, and that helps.
I'm going to be a little bit more... I'm not going to say negative. I'm going to be more realistic. From what I saw against Spurs, we've got so much work to do. Well, I don't think we're anywhere near ready for the season. Fitness wise, perhaps. And I've made this criticism so often. We should have been playing against tougher opposition well earlier into preseason. And I don't want anybody to call me a negative Nancy or anything, but I think we're going to be under a lot of pressure at Villa Park.
A negative Nakamba, sorry.
Negative Nakamba. Like, you can call me that if you want. I'm going to say 2-1 Bournemouth. I think we're going to push them, and I think we're going to deliver a strong performance for sure. But from what I can see, I don't think we're able to hold that up for 90 minutes, considering that we only managed to get 4 or 5 opportunities against Spurs. I'm going to safely say 2-1 to Bournemouth for this. James, I'm sure, and by the way, you can't run away from a prediction. There is no reason why you can't make a prediction. So you've got to make
Villa,
one.
There you go. 4-0 Aston Villa. Bournemouth are missing loads of key players. Villa will be licking their wounds and ready to kind of run over a team at Villa Park, I guess.
Who's getting the goals? Who's getting them?
I think El Ghazi grabs one. I think Trezeguet grabs one. And I think Wesley gets two, and one of them's a penalty.
You're making me excited now.
That's exciting, isn't it? But it's not going to happen.
Well, that was your prediction, though, man.
I can imagine it. If you imagine it, envision it hard enough, like, surely... I've been told that comes true. If you project it, if you mentally project this stuff, this positivity, it should come true. It's not going to, though. I remember that happening in the relegation season. I was just thinking, if I think hard enough, we'll win a game.
Oh, actually, speaking of the relegation season, right, before we go, because I know you're planning on ending the podcast soon. I want one of you, right? Cole, James, whichever one of you it is. Can somebody like shut up this stupid statistic which is going round about Jack Grealish like being...
Oh, it drives me nuts.
The guy who's like been in the most like... I think he's got the biggest ever losing streak of a Premier League player.
It's true. Loads of rubbish, though.
Yeah, because I mean, everybody else who was in that poor Villa team is gone and he survived, right?
Yeah, but he was what, like 18 when that happened? Like... Or was that, he was young. Like, I don't even understand how you can argue that, because what was it? They put the stat as the fifth, was it the 14-15 and 15-16 season, if that makes sense. So if that's the case, like, that's just stupid, because like he played like 3 games in 14-15, I think it said, and the rest were in 15-16. And if that's the case, he's coming on as a sub. So like there's no difference. He's not going to make a true impact.
A 19-game losing streak is a hell of a thing, but the context, you have to apply stats to context, right? And it's such a useless stat that informs nobody of anything, like, at all. It just tells you that a player has played for a Premier League team and lost 19 times. It doesn't matter that it was with Aston Villa. He could have been bought each season by, I don't know, Cardiff, Swansea, Huddersfield, and just gone down and not won a game at all.
Well, told them to look at the team. Like, we had Mickey Richards in defence. So, like, what do you expect?
Like, Danny, do you get anything from that, or does it tell you anything useful?
Nah, man. All it tells me is that Jack Grealish was part of, I don't want to be mean, but like, was one of the worst performing teams in Premier League history. That's not an opinion. That is, you know, going off points, right? We were so negative around that time. Very, very negative. We lay down like in so many of those games and just took defeats. There wasn't really any sort of desire to push. And whenever we conceded, we'd buckle. But perhaps that's what affects some of my feelings of what happened against Tottenham. Maybe it's just I'm so used to seeing that happening in the Premier League with us. But yeah, we were in a rough point at that point. We've got new owners now. We're a team that actually has some sort of a system, has some sort of a plan now. So listen, man, Jack Grealish is a heck of a player, and if you're going to base him off his performances as a 20-21 year old in a awfully performing team, then you're just hating on him for the sake of it. You're just another one of those people who doesn't like Jack Grealish because he's a fancy looking lad and he's a fancy looking player, right? Who's probably one of the most talented Englishmen in the league.
We're in a lot better place now than we were all those years ago, right?
Yeah, and I mean, if anything was to happen to us, we're in a much better state to be able to fix it. There's clearly not a morale problem going on anymore, and I don't think our management are gonna stand by if players aren't performing. Basically, there's just a plan. I think we're just ambitious now, aren't we, Cole?
Yeah, we haven't had a plan in, oh God. let's see. I started Talk Aston Villa on YouTube in 2012-13 season, I think it was. I don't think we've had a plan since then, or maybe even before that, because that was Lambert days. So to see where we are now, it's completely different. That's the thing too. And I think, just not to rant about it, but if you're a football fan, you're fickle. It's just how it is. It's a thing of being a general sports fan, actually, in any sport, I guess I could say. But we're going to have negative fans no matter how well we do, how poorly we do. And it's going to take longer than just last season's turnaround and this season, no matter how it goes, to turn around some of the fan base, because there's still going to be people looking at the relegation season and saying, why did this still happen? And they're still out there. It's just one of the things that time, progression, and belief's going to have to take over. And when that does, and hopefully the positive vibes and everything and the trend of the way the team's actually going and playing continues.
Well, I've got a plan, and that's to end this podcast, guys. Thank you for joining me. You can follow Cole at Talk Aston Villa. You can follow Danny at Raza Giorno. Follow me at Gemma Russian, and altogether at 7500 to Holt. We'll see you very soon after Villa hopefully beat Bournemouth and pick up their first points of the Premier League season. Up the Villa, and goodbye.